okay, so I bought an NFT, but now what? How do I know there's no value to it beyond what I've just bought? It's very possible that the NFT space is going to be completely different in 5 years' time. In fact, guaranteed. It looks to me, at least, that the hype around the basic NFTs has crashed. So NFTs are going to be far more about ownership, and I think the potential is going to be very much for logistics, ops, education, something that's going to have a little bit more value in eliminating the middlemen.
Hey everyone, welcome to MetaMind 3.0 podcast, a meeting of minds where we speak to industry specialists and brand experimentalists to uncover, demystify, and understand Web3 and the metaverse, and answer the question, so what? Why should we as people and brands pay attention to the developments and what are the real world applications for us as individuals, businesses, and communities? I'm your host, Brandon Buzatil, and this is my journey into Web3 and the metaverse. Welcome aboard. In this episode, I chatted to Lauren Howarth. She's an NFT investor, a businesswoman, and a marketing pro. Her experience at the intersection of running a business and an NFT marketplace makes her a kick-ass person to chat to about where the space is going and what businesses need to start thinking about in terms of getting involved here. Lauren and I dive into what she looks for when investing in NFTs, why tangible value is crucial, and what real business applications of NFTs actually are. She's currently working on a project that does just this, so the perspective she has is incredibly relevant. Hope you enjoy this chat as much as I did. You can find resources we spoke about in the show notes and more episodes on our website and social pages, as well as our upcoming events, also linked in the show notes. Enjoy. Lauren, welcome to the first MetaMind 3.0 podcast.
Cool. Thanks for having me.
Got some icebreakers for you. What is a quote or thought you live your life by?
So there was one where, what was the guy's name? Henry Ford.
Hmm?
Yeah. He said, if you'd asked people what they wanted, they would have said faster horses. And that came from the guy who came up with, obviously, automotive vehicles. So it was an interesting concept for marketing that I thought, where you could only ask people so much about what they want, but you don't know what you don't know. So often brands need to go and create something that is beyond what people would ask for, provided it's convenient. So it's always been an interesting one. You can go and get feedback from as many people as possible, and everyone's got different opinions. But that's not always going to give you the right answer.
Mm-hmm. I love that. I haven't heard that, actually.
Mm.
That's a nice one. Are you an early bird or night owl?
Early bird, 100%. I'm in bed by 8 o'clock every night. I can't.
That's fantastic. I've actually recently, this week, started to get in bed by 8:30, which is super early for me, and started rising at 4:30 to basically knock out 3 hours of work, then go to gym. And it's been an absolute game changer.
You know, I think as teenagers, we would like to sleep late. And I did once, and I woke up at 2 o'clock in the afternoon and I'd realized I'd slept away most of my weekend. And I was distraught after that. I just couldn't believe how much I'd wasted, because I'd looked forward to the whole weekend. Now we got there and it was wasted because I'd slept the whole time. And ever since then, I've never slept beyond 9 o'clock, unless there was a very heavy night the night before. But no, I like getting up early, gym first thing in the morning. You know, everything's dead quiet. There's so much that you can do in the morning. So if I've done gym and breakfast and hit the ball rolling before 9 o'clock in the morning on a Saturday, the weekend's going to be good.
For sure. Would you rather be an Olympic gold medalist or an astronaut, and why?
Olympic medalist, because my feet are on the ground. The concept of sitting in a closed compartment on top of an effective bomb is not my slice of cheese.
So you're not going to take up Sir Richard Branson or Elon Musk with space travel?
No. I'm happy to watch and take pictures and cheer for them when they come back, but I'm quite happy with my feet on the ground. I know lots of friends who would love to go, and in fact, they'd like to go be part of those groups where you leave and you go and repopulate on Mars. And I think it's got to take a certain type of human being to leave everything that you've known behind. in search of something new. A very, very specific type of human being who could do that. Not me.
For sure. And Mars, yeah, I could choose better places than Mars.
I don't know. I don't think I'm going to, you know, I'm probably not going to be at the age where I live and there's going to be flying cars. I mean, I'd be surprised if there was. The logistics around that, I don't know if we are advanced enough for that, but I think our kids will and all the future generations will, so that'll be interesting for them.
And would you rather travel back in time to meet your ancestors or the future to meet your descendants, and why?
Sure. Probably to the future, so I could better understand how to prepare my kids and future generations for what's to come. But I suppose it's an interesting concept because people were like, if you'd known what was coming and what you're going to have to go through to get there, would you still do it? And I think most people would say, no ways. No ways I'm going to go through that kind of trauma and difficulty, et cetera, to go and get to a certain point. But there's also benefit in not putting your head underground and actually living consciously, knowing what's coming, doing as much as you can to be informed about as much as you can and make informed decisions. So I'd probably go into the future, understand what's coming, and be able to come back and at least try and prepare people for what's coming.
For sure. So look, obviously we've spoken a lot about your involvement in NFTs, blockchain. You know, you were recently at our event talking about an introduction to the metaverse. So you know, stranger to NFTs and you know, stranger to strategies that involve to, from a marketing perspective, as well as running businesses. You actively invest in NFTs, but you're also involved in projects that are using NFTs and the blockchain to enhance business models, improve engagement, as well as education. So there's obviously a lot that you are involved in, but something we've spoken about is the fact that you feel there's tangible value missing from a lot of NFT projects. So I think that's a good place to start, is talking about, you know, the tangible value and what is tangible value in your eyes related to NFT projects.
Yeah, so, you know, when the NFT saga started, obviously any new market, you're going to have peaks and troughs. And we're expecting, and we've just come through this process where it's been this major peak that's gone through this, and the entire NFT market is hyped. And there's been a huge amount of money that's passed through the ecosystem. But, and I absolutely got caught up in it as well. You know, you got the Bored Apes Yacht Club. There are a number of different iterations that came out of that. That was our first introduction to generative NFTs. And generative NFTs are, you basically have the same template and there are variations of that, and they use this kind of AI system that makes every single one of them unique. So you've got the same template, but you've got a number of different types of hair, eye color, accessories, etc. And that's how you can make the 10,000, 20,000 NFTs that are just slight variations from each other. Now, NFTs came about because we all know assets as something that has the ability to maintain or accrue value, like property, for example. So an NFT is just a digital version of an asset. And it started out more in the artscape and musicscape. So the concept of being able to sell digital art was a really interesting feature. And the fact that once you sold it, you would be able to trace it at any given point, at any given time. So art theft is not necessarily possible unless somebody gets into your wallet, which is, of course, we've heard happened recently. To Seth Green, actually, one of the actors, he's lost. In fact, one of his NFTs was supposed to star in a TV show that's upcoming. So there's this whole lawsuit that's going around because someone's actually hacked his wallet and stolen the NFT. So that's a bit of a disaster.
But I know.
So you've got you know, all the graphic artists who've jumped onto the bandwagon. That's been very cool. And the thing about NFTs is you can combine them with smart contracts. So not only can you sell your art, but you can also build in royalties. Now, these smart contracts operate off of an if-then type of logic. So if X and X criteria is met, then do X, Y, and Z. So it's almost like an automated contract that can self-execute. So that means as an artist, if I sell my painting and I'm going to build in 10% royalties in perpetuity. So every time that artwork is sold and resold and resold, I'll get 10% of that in perpetuity. And that's built into the smart contract, and that always executes, and that can't be messed with or interfered with. And that's the other part of this, what makes it so interesting on the blockchain, is anything that has been closed off on the blockchain and added to can't be messed with in any kind of way. You can't change anything. That's why they call it immutable. So you had the art, and then you obviously the music artists and rock bands, etc., have all jumped into the bandwagon as well, because this way they can get rid of the middleman and they can always ensure they're being paid their royalties, which has been, you know, if we look back at Rodriguez, at the story of Finding Sugarman, and the fact that he had no idea about his popularity in South Africa. I mean, he was almost as big as Elvis, dare I say. And he had no idea, and people were stealing his royalties for years. That will never happen on the blockchain. So the blockchain can eradicate all that kind of theft and make sure that people, you know, artists can go one-to-one with their customers and their fans. So NFTs have started to create this really interesting environment where you can start tailoring really interesting projects. So if you've got an artist that wants to do their own album, and that album, let's just say they can divide that album into 10 NFTs for $20,000 each. If 50 Cent sold that kind of thing, it would sell out. And then they would be the only one. They would have obviously the bragging rights because they would have the actual ownership. So there's lots of iterations that have happened, which has been very cool. But when I started to get involved in the NFT space and I put an NFT up, which is never sold, because, you know, in comparison, when I look at it now, I was quite naive when I put up, so I did a painting, a really basic painting. I put it up and it cost me a fortune in gas fees to put up on OpenSea. But the process was to understand, how do you do it? What happens? How much does it cost? Actually costs you to list and to mint. And then I realized that the two-dimensional nature without the, so there's a couple of things that have happened now. Number one, I didn't have a brand, which is what the Bored Ape Yacht Club have created. So they've created a brand, but not only a brand, they've created like this VIP membership environment where it kind of leans onto people's innate need to feel a belonging. People will naturally gravitate towards groups where they feel like they belong. And these NFT membership spaces have created that. These very exclusive clubs, once you buy in, then you're in the club, and then whatever else is released after that, then you get the value. So I got involved in creating my own one, which was a disaster. But it's still there. I have no idea how to get it off. I wish I could. And then I bought a couple as well. Now they just sit there in my wallet. And I know I'm supposed to follow all the information on Discord, but if anyone's gone down the black hole of Discord or Telegram, you know, it's an absolute UX nightmare. And the push notifications drive me absolutely batshit. So I don't do what I'm supposed to do in terms of being a member of that community, because I think for normal working people, we're busy. It's a bit of a difficult thing to keep up with. But at the same time, I'm still not seeing any innate value. Now that I've bought it, that's great. Now what? So starting to do a bit of research around a lot of the, and there have been thousands of NFT projects that have launched now. And a lot of them are just images that you can prove ownership to, which is part of the NFT process, but that's it. And then you kind of sit there and, us from South Africa, we know that there are still a multitude of human rights issues that we haven't solved yet. So you kind of sit there saying, okay, so I'm going to spend $100, which is what? 1,600 Rand, something like that. Even 16,000 if they're lucky. But there's still people that have no access to running water. There's still a lot of kids that are malnourished in different parts of the world. There's still a lot of people who don't have any homes. There are a number of different issues, and the fact that we've got climate change issues that are happening as well. So whilst this technology is starting to take off and the potential is there, I haven't, up until this point, seeing NFT projects that are being able to give back into the real world. And I think anyone over 30 is kind of in a space now where we're like, the idea of buying a digital Nike sneaker and not being able to put it on my foot kind of defeats the purpose of Nike. I mean, you know, maybe the younger kids like the idea of buying avatars and dressing avatars and changing hair colors and whatever. But I think for us business folk who actually like to see people, and we know that that's how sales is done and that's how relationships are built, we want to see people's faces, etc. That concept of avatars, for me, are not great for business. I certainly don't want to have get some financial advice from some guy in a bunny suit over voice over IP. So I've kind of oscillated in this space to kind of say, oh, that's a cool piece of art, but no, I'm not going to spend that amount of money on it. Well, and that's a really cool piece of art as well, but I'm still not seeing anything else from it. So then it came down to, I was contacted by this founder who had heard my piece on what NFTs are, and he'd said, I've got this project that I'm busy with. I'm like, okay, cool, you know, I'll have a listen. And what he's trying to do is use NFT technology to generate funding for kids that need education in various parts of the world. Now, this is an interesting concept because a lot of funders from around the world are cautious about donations and charities, et cetera, because there's been so much scamming around the concept. Like, you send money, you don't actually know it gets to where it's supposed to go. And the whole idea with blockchain is it can go direct to student. So now you get a space where a funder in the US can send money and it can go directly to a student in various parts of Africa or around the world. And then by buying an NFT, you are contributing towards somebody's education. And for a lot of people, at least in Africa and other parts of rural areas around the world, when one person is educated, that uplifts an entire community. So it suddenly starts to change the nature, and NFTs are not just about the art. Of course, the art is wonderful as well, and it can be a combination of. But if you're going to buy an asset, you want it to have some kind of real value. And for me, when you start talking about, does this NFT educate kids? Can it go towards funding social development? Can it go towards healthcare? Now you're talking. Mm-hmm. That's where I find the tangible value. And that's starting to come to the fore now.
Well, yeah. And that's the big conversation we've had. And that we've also, like, one of the reasons we started BetterMind was to answer the question, so what? Mm. So, like, in terms of the technology around, obviously, NFT, blockchain, the metaverse concept, what does that actually mean, you know, to businesses, to peoples, to brands? And the fact that, obviously, you have real experience with certain businesses creating actual utility and using the technology to solve real problems is massive. So then in terms of your experience, what would you like to see, and why do you think it's important for businesses to start getting into the NFT space?
Well, I suppose it depends on the business strategy, right? I mean, at the moment, we've got a lot of middlemen for a lot of different things, and that adds on a markup to all your costs. If you don't need a middleman and you can go direct, and generally what you do is you use a middleman to navigate legal issues, regulatory issues, licensing issues, etc. And now you get an opportunity where NFTs that come with smart contracts can be built around that, and you can execute things without having any human intervention. So it's almost, you know, the concept of discussing the divorce before you get married. Mm. So it's about sitting down and understanding exactly what you need and how your business needs to run, and to set up, if this happens, then that must happen. If this happens, then that must happen. And if you can create an environment where you cut out the middleman and everything is executed along criteria that has been approved by everyone involved, kind of like a community governance type of thing, then once it gets executed, no one can argue the fact. because it's, you know, and a lot of DAOs, so decentralized organizations, have been created where you've got community-driven governance. Instead of having one person, everybody, you need to kind of have a unanimous, or 70% of the DAO needs to agree on something, then you can move it forward. And I think a lot of Ethereum blockchain is operated like that. And that's an interesting space where you can create those regulations, get rid of the middlemen, simplify a lot of stuff. Because the reality is, if you and I have agreed on something, we've signed that agreement, and it's then been developed in Solidity programming language for smart contracts, then once it executes along those criteria, there is no legal base to have an issue with the outcome of that, because it's been pre-agreed. And then what I like about it is that nobody can decide midway through an agreement that, actually, I don't want to do this. Or, I don't want to pay you now. I'll pay you in 120 days, like some of the payment plans are. So everything that you do is pre-agreed, and it's executed on come hell or high water. So it's just a good way of navigating a little bit of human mismanagement that tends to happen in business.
So if let's say we had a DAO, okay, and we have a council of whatever, 10, 15 people to vote, and you bring, I guess, community members have also voting rights, or is it the council specifically?
Generally, it's whoever owns the governance tokens within the DAO has the opportunity to contribute to the governance.
And then how's, I guess, the finance split between the council? Like, how does everyone make their money?
Well, I suppose it's different in all the DAOs. It depends on how they want to regulate it. Generally, it should be all equal. But it's an interesting space, because when you're creating a DAO, it depends on who's in the governance, who's actually working in the DAO itself. So the people who do the day-to-day management of the DAO versus kind of the shareholders. Because generally in any business, right, we know that you have a management agreement and a shareholders agreement, and they're not the same thing. And the same would be said about DAOs as well. So you've got a management group of people who've got a variety of different tokens, and should they have more or equal say when it comes to decisions than the shareholders? So it just becomes an interesting compliance and regulatory conversation. But yeah, I suppose the concept of NFTs is getting rid of the middlemen and being able to simplify and streamline a lot of your logistics and operations. That's the real benefit for, at least in my opinion, for businesses.
And besides for the project that you're involved in right now, are there any other, I guess, noteworthy examples of companies utilizing NFTs, the technology, to solve real issues?
Yeah, I mean, there's a small amount of NFTs that are coming out. There's a lot of blockchain projects, though. There's a lot of blockchain projects in Solar, interestingly enough. So you've got communities that are all being able to connect up their solar panels to the community grids, use their power that's required, and then sell off additional power and redistribute it into the grids. And it's all operated off of a phone. So they don't actually need municipalities. They don't need to pay taxes to municipalities to maintain power. They can do it themselves and generate it through renewable energy. So it reduces everyone's costs. It's an interesting concept for areas that can't get access to power.
Mm.
So, and that's happening. There's one project in Australia, and there's another project also in Los Angeles that's doing that as well. I'd like to see more of those projects happening in Africa, though.
For sure. Yeah. And then you mentioned the amount of, the high gas fees for your project. But just on that wavelength, there is an issue with a lot of people with regards to the sustainability of cryptocurrency and NFTs and all of that, right? Something we've spoken about is some projects looking at green tokens.
Mm.
So I'd like to dive into that a bit. So in terms of, green tokens, what are they and what excites you about them?
Okay, so you've got different types of cryptocurrencies. You've got security tokens, you've got privacy tokens, you've got utility tokens. What we'll talk about now are primarily utility tokens. So
Before we go down there, can you just help the audience understand what's the difference between a token and a coin?
Yeah, so the way that I understand it is when a cryptocurrency is launched on an alternative chain, it's called a token. But if it's launched on its native chain, it's a coin. So if Ethereum launches on the Ethereum blockchain, it's called a coin. But if Ethereum launched on the Bitcoin blockchain, for example, it would be a token. But I mean the words are becoming interchangeable now.
Okay.
We'll get to a stage where it's one and the same thing. Doesn't really matter. But yeah.
Okay, so then just in terms of the different tokens that you get from a utility perspective, so let's touch on the just the different variations that you mentioned, and then in terms of green tokens, let's go into that a bit.
So privacy tokens are interesting because you can do, I think people are scared of privacy tokens to a certain degree because that can help facilitate the dark web and Silk Road and all that kind of environment because it's very difficult to track. But that's a very small portion. That's like Monero is one of them. The other option is security tokens. Those are basically securities. So they're regulated very differently. And that's where you can earn dividends from them. So there's a much higher regulation for those in terms of compliance and financial regulation around the world. Utility token, however, is the more general one that we use at the moment. And that's mainly used in the form of money. And where green tokens are starting to come in is you can, well, it's a generic word, right? Green token. But the concept is you're basically investing in a cryptocurrency that is going towards some kind of sustainability. And where this really gets exciting is my biggest issue is you hear about climate change and you hear about all these things happening, but as a day-to-day normal layman, how do I get involved? Because if I don't have a recycling bin in my apartment building and there's no services that come to do it and you have to drive 2 hours to a recycling, but let's just say it's not convenient. And if things are not convenient, people generally don't do them. That's just the reality of human nature. I think to a certain degree, we are a little bit lazy in that sense. So, you know, you kind of sit there and say, how do I actually get involved in making a difference? That's relatively easy, that I don't have to break my day or my processes to go and do. And suddenly the blockchain has created an environment where you can get involved just by using your phone. Now, that's super lazy as well, but at least we can start contributing. So the concept of green token is now I can buy a token just like I could buy Bitcoin, but except every time I buy this token, that revenue goes towards funding some kind of green portfolio project. So that could be a reforestation project in Ghana. That could be funding a wind farm that's being built in Romania. You know, you got a variety of different options, but the fact that I'm now contributing towards more systems that are regenerating renewable energy, and that can go onto the grid. So that's the concept of a green token. And, you know, in the same way, there's the company that I currently work for, you can get a one-to-one token. So you actually buy a normal token and that goes towards funding the green portfolios. But at the same time, you can also get another token that's burnt. If you've done a certain amount, you burn that for a carbon certificate. And just to maybe dial this back a little bit, because when somebody talked to me previously about carbon credits, I kind of went a little bit glazed in the eyes. I was like, yeah, I've heard about that. I have no idea what you're talking about though. And when I understood it, so just to give people an understanding, as a business, when you are operating, especially at a, you know, we will use Nike or as an example, like a Nike factory, they're going to be using various fuels, machinery, et cetera, to be making, you know, doing the whole production line. And when they're doing that, that's releasing carbon dioxide into the air. And carbon dioxide is one of the issues that we have about the greenhouse gases. So it's a direct contributor to climate change. It's one of the major problems. So it's now becoming regulated around the world that if you are a polluter, so you emit carbon dioxide, you have to go and buy a credit, carbon certificates to offset. So every time you invest in a carbon certificate, you are funding renewable energy or reforestation. So obviously, if you pollute a ton of carbon dioxide, you have to, by law, fund the replenishment of what would be equal to a ton of oxygen, for example. So you need to offset your pollution. And that's where people go and get carbon certificates that makes them carbon neutral. So whatever they've pumped into the air, they've now funded to balance out. And that's the concept behind some of the green tokens as well. So companies are now being able to buy carbon certificates on the blockchain that goes towards funding the green portfolios, and they get given their carbon certificates to offset. It's just a different facilitation.
So then in terms of companies that are involved in green tokens and the theory of being able to mine, obviously, coins and the gas that it obviously takes to do that, and also the whole energy side of things, how do they offset, obviously, that side of things? Because that's obviously an issue that a lot of people have.
So some cryptocurrencies are not mined. You've got Bitcoin is definitely mined, and Bitcoin is one of the major culprits in terms of the sheer processing power that's required to now continue to mine these. I mean, I think something like just over 19 million Bitcoin have been mined, and their cap is 21. But every time something's mined, it's hard. You know, the calculations become harder and harder. So the processing power required to solve those mathematical problems is increasing as well, and that's taking a lot of energy. The same is not required of some of the green tokens, because those are just simply minted, they're not mined. So they're not actually processing or using as much energy, not even close to it. But even if they did, there's an allocation. Generally, these companies have an allocation for whatever they are using to create, they're also funding. So it's a green cycle.
And then in terms of obviously just the NFT landscape, right? You invest in NFTs. In terms of someone who invests in NFTs, what do you look for when you invest in NFTs? How do you kind of do your research?
So that's a great question, because this is really important. And the same for anyone who gets involved in cryptocurrencies, NFTs, any project really. It goes back to the same principles. Now, even though Warren Buffett won't touch cryptocurrencies with a 10-foot pole, his concept and his understanding of saying, I'm not going to invest in anything that I don't understand fully. But it's also the concept of, you only get involved in NFT projects in the same way that you would buy stocks. And what you do is you do your own research. And what that requires is you go back and you make sure that they're registered, they're regulated in some kind of form. You look at their management team. You want to know that the team has experience, qualification. I mean, you don't necessarily need qualifications, but you want experience. You want to know that these guys have been in the industry. They know their sector or whatever their slice is. You know, and especially if they've got some heavy investors, some advisors, they generally will announce those as well. You want to see that there's a big, substantial team behind the project. Then the next thing that you want to see is obviously all the white papers, all the documents as well. There's a lot of projects that have launched with no white papers, but I would have been wary of those, because essentially the white paper is going to outline what this project is. What are you trying to do with it? Where are you going with it? And why should anyone care about it? Because if you're just launching something that I can put as a profile picture, that's not going to mean anything in 2 years' time. But if you are starting to launch something that has tangible value, that is going to accelerate and extrapolate over time, that's something interesting. So I want to see the roadmap. Where are you now? Where are you going? What is this supposed to mean in the bigger scheme of things? And who's it going to help? And who's going to benefit out of it? The whole point of blockchain is you want to see everything. Everything needs to be transparent. And that's the key. It's like, no more smoke and mirrors. Be straight with it. If you're going to make a cut and that person's going to make a cut, you've got to say it. Because you know what? When you say to people, this is the reality, this is what I'm doing, then everyone can make an informed decision about what they want to do. So the process of getting, before I buy any stock, any ETF, I've actually got a Metaverse ETF as well that I look at. I go and look at all the different stocks involved. I go and look at their financial statements. I mean, if you understand reading financial statement, that's useful. Not all companies, especially companies that are not listed, don't necessarily need to display it publicly. But try and get as much information as possible about the project and about the people involved, and try and get an understanding of their intent and their motivation behind it. Because that'll also tell you if they're going to be around for a certain amount of time. Because a company that you've bought an asset from is only going to be valuable if that company is going to be around in 10, 15 years' time. And it's also going to accrue in value if that company is planning to release a number of different extra things that's going to create this environment or this ecosystem. And anything that they create needs to be interoperable with a number of different things as well. So I suppose my process of looking and choosing NFT projects got a lot to do with doing my own research, which is critical, on the management team, the projects, the roadmaps, and perhaps even their investment. You want to know who's backing them, whether it's a substantial backing. So it's a lot of research that goes into it, but it should be the same process that you would do for any other investment.
I think, yeah, I mean, I completely agree with you. And the issue is there's so much hype that people feel they're going to miss out, you know, and then they just want to get involved in an NFT project just because everyone's doing it. And that's where you hear, obviously, of huge losses. Everyone shows the wins. But I mean, obviously, the losses that occur, we know in the past, obviously, few weeks or months, and the market that we're in now, there's people that have lost their fortunes, you know?
Yeah, it's been an interesting space because, I mean, so I've obviously also been involved in the marketing side of cryptocurrencies and all that kind of stuff. So I've seen the dark side of what happens. Mm. And you employ hype teams. And that's what freaks me out a little bit about this market at the moment, is because a lot of it is inflated artificially. And by hype teams, I mean, you can go and employ 1,000 people to create profiles, different types of profiles on Telegram, Discord, Twitter, etc. And their sole purpose is to promote that project. And they'll probably go and create their own profiles as well. So you can get anything from up to your Telegram group can go from 0 to 20,000 people in a day. And that's then crazy. And then people are like, oh my God, everyone's flooding into this project. And then people freak out because, you know, there's so much hype that's going on about it. And because people rely on social proof as almost a part of their validators, they look and they're like, oh, there's 20,000 people involved and everyone's excited. And this person's like, oh, I've read the white paper and it's so good. And the reality is that a lot of people do not do their own research. They'll go and look at the hype. They've heard something from their friend and they get involved. And because they haven't done their own research, they'll go and click on links that's in the Telegram group. And now remembering, in a lot of these social media channels, it's not all moderated. So you can get any bad player that decides to come in and says, oh, guys, I know that you were looking for the link. Here's the link. And you need at least 100 people who click on that link and will go to the wrong website, which has been completely skinned so that you're duped. I mean, unless you look at the URL very carefully, you wouldn't notice because it's the exact replica of the original. And they go and mint a number of things and their money just disappears into the ether. And people lose an inordinate amount of money like this. And it's kind of, I moved out of that marketing space because I looked at what we were being able to do and create this environment that was completely fictitious. And it goes toward pump and dump schemes. I mean, luckily, I wasn't personally involved in that because I got out soon enough. But once you identified that companies can go and hire these hype teams and essentially blow smoke up a project's ass, make people dive into it, because they're diving into it, drives the price up completely within a couple of days, and then everyone sells who've got insider information, and then it wipes out the market completely and they've gone off with 300-400% profit. It's a very lucrative way of making money, but it is at everyone's expense who gets involved.
And I mean, that also goes for people that also purchase certain NFTs.
Mm.
Like you sometimes see, obviously, NFTs exchanging hands. You don't necessarily, if you don't do your own research, that might be all internal as well. You know, people that they've hired just to create that hype.
Yeah. I think the reality that some people don't understand is brands can buy their audience. And by doing that, it's like rent a crowd.
Hmm.
Oh, no, we've got 100,000 members already. People are like, oh, this is great. They must know something I don't. Where in an actual fact, they're all paid actors. So everybody piles in, the money piles in, and then everybody gets paid and then disappears. And the reality is, if you're getting involved because somebody told you to, or you've seen a link on Twitter, you're probably going to get taken out by your knees. And that's the reality of it. So anybody who's interested should never click on any link on any one of the social media channels. You go into Google and you go and type in the right URLs to go and find them and to go and go on to Discord. Because you know what the interesting part for a lot of people is, if there is an NFT project, there's generally a Discord associated. You got to go into that Discord and you got to go and look at the scam section, because they will have different categories that you can go into. There'll be a general chat, there'll be a number of different things, and there'll also be a scam announcement section. You got to go and look at those things before you click on any link and buy anything, because if you have clicked on the wrong thing, and I was caught. It was an invisible friends, and I got completely broiled in the hype. And this one moment, I wasn't paying a hell of a lot of attention. I was on Twitter, I clicked one of the links, I went and minted, and my money went into the ether. Goodbye.
Mm-hmm.
And then I was like, did I get the NFT? No, just went blank. So I went into Discord after that, and I looked through the scam section. They're like, oh, la, la, la. And I was like, guys, this has happened. And they're like, sorry, you got scammed. I was like, no ways. And the thing is, generally, I'm careful. I know what to look for, etc. And a lot of people don't. And if I got taken out by the knees, guarantee you 90% people do. So big bad world.
Yeah, it's scary, you know, and people really do need to do their own research. And talking about obviously doing their research, you mentioned there's a few things to look at. So is this a lot of secondary, obviously, information you find online? Just type in one, go to their website, find the white paper.
Mm.
Is there anything out, like, if they see if they have a Discord, see how long they're going to, you know, their vision of their company is.
Mm. Check out all their social media. Another interesting way of doing is typing in a couple of keywords associated and going to Google News and see what information's come out there. Because generally, if there's been some kind of recorded scam or anything like that, the information will be there. So just doing all the research that you can. I mean, some of these groups are intricate, but I suppose if you've got a really interesting team, and you know, just seeing people's names and faces on a website's not enough, because actually if you go and research them, you'll find that they don't exist.
Mm.
So what I tend to try and look for is I go onto LinkedIn and I'll go and look for those people's names, and if their names match their faces, match their qualifications, then I know it's a legit profile. Because I did come across an NFT project that had this really impressive list of really good-looking people and the management team. And I was like,
I want to be involved in this
I'm
project.
I'm like, wow, this is really, really, really good-looking people, but generally so unrealistic. So it was just weird. And then I was like, okay, no. This is just odd. It was like a modeling agency. Some of them are a little bit more subtle, and I took the name and I put it into Google, to LinkedIn, and the person didn't exist.
Oh, that's interesting.
So I was like, okay. And then you start to go down that rabbit hole and you look at all the other ones. Yeah. So even though you see that there's a management team, go check who they are and check that they are who they say they are. Because you know what? It's really easy to create a fictitious team or create a fictitious company, all that. It's really easy. So just go beyond the glass window, if that makes sense. If you see someone's name in their face, just go and research them. And if they're legit, okay, have a look through. Because what people generally tend to do is they look at things at face value. They get to the website, they see there's a management team, or maybe they look like, you know, old smart dudes, and so it must be legit. And then they don't look anything beyond that, and they get taken up by the knees. So it's just being a bit savvy about what you're doing.
Yeah, for sure. If you're going to invest in a project, you got to do your research. Mm. Otherwise, your money can, especially in the space. So then just in terms of where do you want to see the NFT space in the next, let's say, 2 years and in the next 5 years?
Oh, this is an interesting one, because I'm in the process of developing an NFT project now with a group of people. And we were kind of saying, and this NFT project goes towards funding bursaries for kids. So we're like, how do we do this on a perpetual basis? How do we make this idea sustainable? And then we were like, okay, we're going to do this same model for the next 5 years. And then I started watching the change and the rate of change happening in the NFT space. And I thought, it's very possible that the NFT space is going to be completely different in 5 years' time. In fact, guaranteed completely different. And we can't see where that's going. What I can see is that it looks to me, at least, that the hype around the basic NFTs has crashed. I think people are becoming a little bit more suspicious about what it is. And there's also that case of, okay, so I bought an NFT, but now what? How do I know there's no value to it beyond what I've just bought? So NFTs are going to be far more about ownership and about securing a way to execute smart contracts in a fun way, in a tangible way, in a trackable, traceable way. And I think the potential is going to be very much for logistics, ops, education, something that's going to have a little bit more value in eliminating the middlemen. Well, I'm hoping so, at least.
And then just the project that you're involved in, do you want to just elaborate on that just a little bit before we wrap up?
Yeah, so I'm actually involved in two projects. So this one NFT project is about, it's called ETOG. And basically we're trying to develop an NFT or a series of NFTs, a couple of generative NFTs, to raise enough money to fund X amount of students for the next 5 years. And these students would be able to study online various types of different agriculture, which would allow them to either be subsistence farming or get involved in commercial farming. And I suppose the ultimate aim is to do something towards the UN sustainability goals and making sure that everyone's got something to eat. And the project also has an allocation towards social development. So that means that we can go into schools and we can set up gardens in schools so they can feed the kids straight from the salad gardens. We can go and plant fruit trees along different community areas so everybody has access to a little bit of food. But I suppose the concept is now we can get involved in stuff that matters. That's what really excites me.
It's awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so when are you actually going to go to market with it?
Well, we're still in the development phase, trying to make sure, I think we get so excited about these projects, but we need to make sure that, the economics is done right, that we've done the calculations correctly, that we have gotten the right people involved, because we're having lots of conversations with various influencers, but not for the sake of being an influencer, people who actually care about are in the space. And it's just about getting a whole bunch of people together who want to do something of value. So it's an exciting space. I don't think we're going to come to market in the next 8 months.
Okay.
A lot of prep.
And then just in terms of advice that you would give to business owners, enthusiasts that are skeptical of what role NFTs can play in their business or their lives.
So I think my general consensus is you have to look at your business strategy and whether it makes sense. If there's nothing broke in your system, don't change it. But NFTs, if you think that there is a way that you can streamline operations, and I think the logistics environment is going to change fundamentally, because the combination of NFTs, blockchain, IoT technology, AI is all going to come together in this Web3 mix. And then we're going to start to see some interesting stuff. But I think for any business, start researching the space, understand what your business needs and what these different technologies can offer, but more so what the combination of the technologies can offer, because that's where the real benefit is going to come in, not the technology on its own, an NFT on its own, or blockchain on its own, or IoT on its own. No. How do you combine these tech to streamline and make your processes more cost efficient? That's going to be the real interesting part.
And then just in terms of any resources that people can check out that have helped you in the past, just to learn a little bit more about the space.
YouTube is an amazing, amazing resource. There's obviously a lot of rubbish, but you've got the main influencers. Go and check out the guys who've got the highest followers, and they post quite frequently. Perhaps a lot of them are in the media as well. In fact, if you see an influencer who's on YouTube and you've seen him also in various types of traditional media, then you know that he's got something to say, and then people actually take him seriously. But I suppose it's the other part of the advice is read widely. Listen to lots of different opinions, even if you don't agree. And that's the space. And then just do research. I also use Investopedia a lot because, you know, trading cryptocurrencies and investing in digital assets is not that dissimilar to traditional investing and finance. So I'd say clue yourself up on general finance. Go and have a look at Investopedia. They've also got loads of videos that would help. YouTube's amazing. And then when in doubt, I go onto LinkedIn and I go and find some of the key players and all the different projects, and I ask them questions directly. And generally, if you say to somebody, listen, I'm trying to understand a little bit more, people are really wonderful at being able to just lend 5 minutes to explain things to you.
Awesome. And Lauren, that's, I think, perfect to wrap up. And if people want to get involved and follow you, where can they check you out?
You can find me on LinkedIn. That's the space that I'm at. It's Lauren E. Howarth.
Cool. And we'll add that to our show notes. But yeah, Lauren, thank you so much for being the first guest. That was super interesting.
Well, thanks so much for having me. It was a pleasure.
Cool.
Have the next one.